Today on Maine Calling, deer hunting in Maine. Saturday is the day many Mainers have been looking forward to all year, the opening day of firearms hunting season for Maine. Deer hunting is a big part of the Maine outdoors economy, and it is also a tradition for many families who cherish the time in the woods and hope to stock their freezers for winter. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will get an update on the status of Maine's deer population and how it's being managed. We'll find out about changes to regulations, how drought and climate change have affected Maine's deer population, and the latest on warnings about PFAS in certain parts of the state. Plus, we'll learn about ways to donate part of your deer harvest to food banks. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Fall deer hunting season is upon us, and it is a big part of Maine's outdoor sporting culture. We're going to find out what we need to know about hunting regulations, how the deer population is doing, and where to hunt in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Nathan Bieber, who is deer biologist for Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Christy Holmes Elliott, a registered Maine guide, founder of Maine Women Hunters, an outdoor columnist, and author of the new book coming out tomorrow, Always Game. We invite you to join the conversation. Is deer hunting a tradition in your family, or have you always wanted to try? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Well, welcome to both of you. Nathan, I'll start with a bunch of basic questions for you. I understand the official start of firearms deer hunting season is Monday. Are there important changes to rules and regulations people ought to know about?
I think the big change that most people are probably struggling to wrap their heads around at this point would be that we have some districts this year, wildlife management districts, where we're allowing a hunter with just a hunting license to take a deer of either sex. So in the past, it was previously, if you had your license, that allowed you to take a buck anywhere in the state in the firearm season. But there are a few districts where we're still trying to increase doe harvest a little bit. So we're giving hunters in those districts the ability to take either an antlerless deer, so a doe, or a buck with their license.
All right. And I know that there was a lottery for antlerless deer permits. Is this separate? I mean, is it in some districts you have to have that permit and in some districts you don't?
If you have an antlerless deer permit, and we have them in most districts, but not quite all, that lets you take an additional antlerless deer. So if you want to take more than one deer, you're going to need that antlerless deer permit for the district where you want to take that antlerless deer.
All right. Generally speaking, where are the districts where you can take the extra deer?
The way we do our antlerless deer permits is we first distribute them by a lottery, and then basically whatever's left over after that lottery happens, we sell those through our website to people on a first-come, first-served basis. And the districts right now where we still have permits left over that people could buy are districts 21 through 25 and also district 29. So if you're a hunter in one of those districts and you would like to take an additional antlerless deer, you can still go on our website and buy yourself another permit.
And what's the principle behind that? Why is it that you're encouraging people to take antlerless deer?
These are all districts where we're seeing our population over time continually growing and growing and growing, and it's been really difficult for us to kind of level things off or start decreasing the population a little bit. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It could be that we're kind of up against the maximum number of hunters out there that we can appeal to with antlerless permits. And also land access is just really challenging now. It can be hard for people to find a place to hunt. And if you can't find a place to hunt, it's really hard to manage deer numbers through hunting.
Okay, well, that was sort of my big question, Nathan, is how is the deer population doing in Maine? I know over the years there's been a lot of concern that there are fewer deer in northern Maine and central Maine and more in southern Maine. Are we still seeing that trend, and or not so much? Are we seeing improvement?
I would say statewide, we think we have now as many or more deer than we really ever have before. But we definitely still see that kind of dichotomy where there's a lot of deer in central and southern Maine, and northern Maine deer not quite so robust a population up there. And that's really mostly still due to winter severity. Even though we've had pretty wild, mild winters lately, when we do get a severe winter, it can have really significant impacts on our deer population up north. We've had a deer collaring study that's since wrapped up now, but we saw in very severe winters in areas out in the big woods in northern Maine, we might lose 40 to 50% of our deer in a bad year. So it's very cyclical up north. And the end result of that is fewer deer up there and quite a lot more down south.
And I have to ask whether the broader trend of climate change or the specific trend this year of a drought has affected Maine's deer population, and if so, how?
I think on climate change, if temperatures keep warming and winters keep getting mild, we will see increasing deer numbers, especially in northern Maine, where densities right now are pretty low. On the drought, though, it's really kind of hard to say exactly what's going on with the drought and deer. If you do have drought conditions, it might impact where deer are spending their time, favoring areas closer to water. They might also change what they're eating and focus more on plants that are a higher water content or plants that are able to stay nutritious even when they're water stressed. So you might see some of that. And then anecdotally, I feel like we've got a lot more reports this year of deer damage to both crops and ornamentals and plants in people's yards and stuff like that. So I think deer may be focusing more on areas where there's still succulent growth available to them. And a lot of times that puts them in someone's backyard where you've been watering a garden or your crops or something like that.
And Nathan, let me ask you about Monday. How many people do you expect to take to the woods, take the day off if they have a job and take to the woods on Monday?
I'll just say a lot. We don't have great numbers for the number of hunters out there. And part of that is because we have, I think we're over 70,000 lifetime hunting license holders right now. And we don't have a way really to get a hold of those people every year and see if they're actually going to hunt. So you might buy your kid a lifetime license when he's 5 years old. And then he grows up and he's 15, 20 years old, and he might not even hunt, but we don't know what he's doing with that license. So it's kind of hard to say what that big chunk of people are doing, but overall, I think hunter numbers are pretty stable, maybe slightly growing in Maine, but we don't have great numbers.
All right. Well, Christy, of course, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're an experienced deer hunter and you are a guide, but I understand you didn't grow up hunting deer, right? How did you get into hunting?
That's right, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. I grew up in Machias and seemed like everyone else I knew deer hunted, but my folks didn't. And so it was just very normal growing up there, being around hunters, you know, doing a lot of target shooting. And then I think it's an emerging trend that kind of as you grow up, you kind of start thinking about where your food comes from and ethically sourcing meat. And, you know, hunting really started to appeal to me when I had the time. And you know, I decided for me that that was the most ethical way to source food. I think it's like so fun. What other hobby do you get to sit outside and learn about wildlife and maybe bring home food, like not golf or skiing? And so now we pretty much don't have to buy meat at the grocery store.
Wow. So that means that you actually succeed.
Yes. Yes. After a few years of, unsuccessfulness. It looks easy, but it's hard.
I was going to ask you what you have planned for next week, but you're not actually waiting for Monday, right? You might go out today. Why is that? It's not that you're a poacher. It's because?
Well, I'm just so anxious. And so I have a bow. So I'll go sit in my tree stand with my bow and probably no deer will come close enough, but it's kind of like scouting. And I will mention Saturday is the opening day for Maine residents. So I'll be out there with my firearm on Saturday.
Oh, that's right. So thank you for clarifying that for me. Let's talk about your book, your first book coming out tomorrow. What can you tell us about it?
It's called Always Game, and it's a memoir, even though my dad says I'm too young to write a memoir. My mom said I'll just have to write a sequel. It's about growing up down east and hiking the Appalachian Trail and getting a bird dog and, my love of the outdoors and how empowering it is to be out in the woods alone, providing for your family.
Well, many people know you, Christy, because you've really brought so many women into the sport. And tell us about it. Did it all start with the Facebook page? How did this all get going?
Yes, exactly. It started with a Facebook page. Obviously women are still a minority in hunting and fishing too. And I always thought, well, I'm the only one. I'm a weirdo. So I started this Facebook group, and now it's up to almost 8,000 members, all women from Maine. And guess what? I'm not a weirdo. There's a bunch of us. And it's really empowering to see other women getting out there, building confidence, taking their kids out there. And just like, I was a goody two-shoes growing up, so hunting really provides an outlet for me to get a little dirty.
When
And
you guide, do you find that it's a lot of women who are seeking you out to be your their guide?
yeah, I think the department does a great job too. They've kind of I think it's accepted that women learn better amongst other women. We're just more comfortable learning amongst our peers.
Nathan, what can you tell me about the demographics of deer hunters? Other than more women hunting, what else do we know? Is it changing?
I can say if you look at like an age breakdown of our hunters right now, the big kind of spikes where you see the most people are actually the really young hunters under 20 years old. And then here in Maine in particular, we have a very old hunting population. The next greatest demographic is our hunters over 70 years old. So we have kind of this interesting spike at the young end, spike at the old end, and sort of a valley in between where we don't have as many hunters in that sort of 20 to 50, 60 year old range. So
Do you
it's
think
nice to see
that's,
the folks
I'm
are.
wondering if it's the same reason we have a problem with volunteer firefighters in many towns, that people are just in the middle of their working careers and can't take the time off.
I think that's probably a big part of it is you just have the young professionals don't have time to get out in the woods and they're starting families and just very busy. So it's kind of the folks who are not yet at that point or those who are well beyond that point that are able to spend their most time in the woods. I think you're probably right about that.
We're coming right off the youth hunting days, right? Tell us how those went this year.
Yeah, it was a very big youth hunt this year. I think this is our third year now where it's been a 2-day hunt. And we took just over 2,500 deer this year during the youth hunt. Compared to about 1,000 in the first year of the 2-day hunt and about 1,800 last year. So really big year for our youth hunters out there, and I suspect all the seasons are going to end up being pretty big.
Okay, I have to ask you about something, Nathan, doing research for today's show. I found a lot of articles about a new way to tag deer, something about a pilot program and an app. What's going on out there?
So there's not quite a pilot program. I know the reporting you're referring to though, but yeah, that's a good thing. I would love to clear that up. So basically what happened is there's been some interest expressed over the years in having an online self-registration system for deer. So we already have for turkeys, we can just go online and register your turkey online. And a lot of people want that for deer as well. So our legislative committee has basically given us a directive to study it, see what it would require as far as resources to put that kind of system together, what might timelines look like. Really, just report back to them on whether we think we can make it happen, what it would look like, what it would cost. And so we're going to provide that report back this winter and just arm them with the best info we have so they can kind of make a decision and point us in the direction they'd like us to go. So we might have in the future online tagging for deer, but we don't have a pilot program and we're not definitely moving in that direction. We're just kind of looking into it at this point.
All right. I want to ask you, Christy, when you guide people, do you have a philosophy? Do you have something, especially for novice hunters, that you are trying to impart?
I think it's important, and people are interested in obviously in a successful hunt, but also just learning about the environment. The first question you get asked as a guide, which is a joke, is what kind of flower is that? So you really have to know everything or a little bit about everything about the whole outdoors here in Maine. But I really try to explain what I'm doing and why. hiring a guide is a great way to get into the sport. We'll probably talk about that later, but your guide should be explaining why they're making the decisions they are so that you can go back and you can figure out, and be successful on your own.
Well, let's talk about that, getting into it, Nathan. If people are listening right now, maybe you've just moved to Maine, maybe you are interested in learning to hunt. Where does one even start? Are there safety classes offered by the state? How does one get outfitted? What would be your advice to somebody who's intrigued, interested, but doesn't know anything?
We definitely do have safety classes, and we have a lot of what are called kind of mentorship or learn to hunt programs as well. And they're free programs we put on all throughout the state where you can do all sorts of different things. You can learn how to hunt for turkeys, how to call turkeys. You can learn how to scout for deer, how to field dress deer when you shoot one. We've got all sorts of programs, but I'd really recommend getting in touch with someone who can mentor you if you can do that. And if you don't know someone, you might reach out to a regional biologist or a game warden and just ask, do you know anyone who might be willing to mentor me or even reach out to a guide for that kind of info? If you have someone you can go out with, that just relieves so much stress for you being out in the field, not knowing what you're doing, knowing that you've got a steady hand with some experience next to you. So I'd highly recommend doing that if you can.
Christy, who makes a good deer hunter?
Well, it's patience, but I call it stubbornness personally. I'm not patient, but I am stubborn. So I kill them with my butt. I just sit and sit and sit.
And how do you keep from getting bored out there?
Sometimes I listen to a podcast in one ear. I've read books before. Anything that keeps you in the tree stand.
Nathan, we talked a little bit about climate earlier, and you mentioned that as the climate warms, it is possible we'll see more deer in northern Maine, but I'm wondering about another disadvantage to deer hunters is it used to be that often in November there was snow on the ground, and that was something that people really looked forward to was tracking. It's not really the case in most of Maine anymore if we're November, is it?
No, it's pretty rare. I would even say in northern Maine in the muzzleloader seasons that come in December, it's pretty rare to have good tracking snow, but we get it on occasion. You can still travel north and find that if you really want it. So there's certainly trade-offs there. If climate's warming and we're seeing more deer, hunters going to value that more than the tracking conditions. That's up to each individual hunter. So a lot of trade-offs there. But you can find tracking snow if you really want it. Just got a
Yeah.
muzzleloader.
It seems to me, though, it's really kind of changed the whole atmosphere, the whole sort of tradition in a way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people, when they think of Maine and deer hunting, they're thinking of cutting a buck track and following it through the woods for miles until they find that buck. And without the snow to track the deer, that becomes pretty difficult. And a lot of people have to maybe change the way they think about hunting, especially in southern Maine, where we have a lot more deer and a lot more opportunity now. You might have hunters shifting down there, and you're definitely not tracking deer for miles in a lot of southern Maine. You're doing a lot of what Christy's talking about, sitting in a stand or up against a tree waiting for a deer to walk past you.
Christy, how does one decide where to go, where to hunt?
Well, for me personally, asking permission from coworkers or friends, I mean, if you own land, that's perfect. But there's a lot of public land, a lot of nature, like the Nature Conservancy allows hunting on a lot of their land, local land trusts, Maine Small Woodland Owners Association on, I think, a lot of their land, Rachel Carson. So there's a lot of public land out there. You can contact them, ask them for, what you have to do. Sometimes you have to fill out a form to get permission. And then scouting, once you get permission, you got to scout and look for that deer sign.
Do you start much earlier in the season? Are you out just looking?
Some of my spots I leave game cameras up year round just because they're fun to see. I've seen bobcats. It's fun to see the wildlife that's on there, but yeah, it's always scouting.
All right. Well, we are talking about deer hunting season in Maine. What are your questions about Maine's deer population, about hunting, whether it's getting into it or new regulations? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or you can send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Deer hunting with firearms begins Saturday for Maine residents, Monday for everybody else. We are learning about the state of the deer population, the latest on hunting rules, and where to go in Maine. My guest today, Christy Elliott, who is a registered Maine guide, and she leads the group Maine Women Hunters. And with me, Nathan Bieber, state deer biologist with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. We invite you to join the conversations. What question do you have about this year's deer hunting season? Have you ever wanted to learn to hunt, or are you opposed to the whole idea? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Gus Nelson, Director of the Emergency Food Assistance Program with the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I understand you lead the Hunters for the Hungry program. Explain how it works and how it's expanded.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to all the hunters that have helped us throughout the years. We've been around since 1996. And our program works with hunters toward a common goal of helping Mainers in need. If a hunter has an extra bear or deer or moose, all they have to do is drop it off, field dress at a processor that's part of our network. And that's all they have to do. We pay the bill at the processor. And we also ensure that a soup kitchen or a food pantry comes and picks up that meat.
How many food processors across the state are processors are involved in this?
We have 26 right now, and we're trying to grow that. They're pretty well distributed across the state, but there's still some room for growth.
Are these donating their time? Is the state paying them a stipend?
They would process the game meat just like any other game meat that a hunter drops off. It's just that we pay the bill. So we make it super easy for the processor. We make it super easy for the hunter. And then within a matter of days, the food pantry or soup kitchen comes and gets it. So it's into the emergency food system as quickly as possible.
Tell me about the impact that it's had in years past.
Oh, food pantries love getting this source of protein. It's lean, it's healthy, it's local, and demand is growing. We grew this program 50% from 2 years ago to this year. 2 years ago, we facilitated 6,400 pounds of fresh game meat. Last year, we're up to 9,500. But as I'm listening to your panelists, there's so much room for growth out there. There are so many deer. And food pantries are struggling right now. There's a lot of demand for fresh local protein.
Yeah, and we do know that food pantries are struggling. And also with this latest news about people losing SNAP benefits, which is nutrition assistance for those who need it, what are you hoping this year?
We have put more money into the program, and we would love to raise our fresh game meat output again by 50%. And of course, most of our activity is during hunting season, but we do work with processors that can take game all year round. We love working with landowners, as I think Nathan mentioned, we love working with farmers, and I know Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife has a few permitting programs for landowners and farmers to take extra antlerless deer. And we worked with a farm recently in southern Maine. They were able to give us 10 extra deer, so that was wonderful.
Wow. I know Christy Elliott has a question for you. Christy, go ahead.
Gus, can hunters, they can just donate a portion of their deer, or do they have to donate the whole thing?
Excellent point. They can donate the entire animal or just a portion.
Okay, and Gus, what about outside of deer hunting season? Let's say you have a freezer full of either deer meat or moose meat or something. Can you donate some of that any time of the year?
Our program, Hunters for the Hungry, only accepts fresh meat for processing, but if you do have some extra deer meat in your freezer, give a call to your local food pantry or a soup kitchen. They would probably love to have that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Before we let you go, anything else you want to add about this program, Hunters for the Hungry?
We have an excellent webpage, and if you're a hunter or a processor, go to your favorite search engine and plug in H4H, that's the number 4, and Maine, and it'll take you right to our page, and or you can give us an email at h4h@maine.gov.
All right. Well, that was Gus Nelson. He directs the State Emergency Food Assistance Program. Before we move on, though, there's something really important we haven't talked about, Nathan, and that is the recent advisory about PFAS in deer. Tell me how the state is determining which deer are contaminated and what the areas are now that you're advising people not to harvest deer.
We began sampling deer a few years ago using USDA staff removing deer from the field and sending in muscle and liver tissues to the lab to test for PFAS levels. And what we found through those studies was that the levels of PFAS in tissues were very highly correlated with the PFAS levels being elevated in the soils where the deer came from. So now we're also using soil data to inform our management recommendations. But we added a new area this year that impacts the towns of, I believe it was Thorndike and Unity and Knox, I believe. And then we've also got three other consumption advisory areas that we've had for a while. The first one was the big one in Fairfield. It's Fairfield and Skowhegan. And then the others impact parts of Unity and Unity Township and Freedom and Albion, I think, are all the towns. So we've got 4 advisory areas now.
Do you fear that those warnings will be expanding in the future?
My impression, though I'm not super involved with the PFAS work anymore, is that we've kind of got the worst of the worst areas. So I'm hopeful that there's not too much added to that in the future, but really hard to say at this point.
All right. Christy, I know you wanted to add something. Earlier I asked where are good places to hunt, where do you figure some out? And tell us about an app that you use.
Yeah, Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife came out with a new app, and if you're a hunter or a fisherman and you haven't downloaded it, it's really great. It's really easy to use, has all sorts of information. You can see all your licenses and legal hunting times, and there's a map in there, and it shows all the state-owned wildlife management areas, and there's about 70, and most of them, almost all of them, allow hunting. And in the app, on the map, it shows where you can even park to access those. And if you click on them, it will tell you, you know, specifically what you're allowed to hunt in there.
All right. Some emails coming in. This one from Ed. I was wondering if Nate could speak to the need to harvest antlerless deer, the ecological role that plays, and how the new system of bonus antlerless tags is changing and challenging the culture of deer hunting in Maine, especially people who, quote, won't shoot does.
Well, I'll touch on that last part first. There's a lot there. That was a really interesting question. Thank you. I think Maine has a pretty long-standing tradition of mostly being buck hunting, and a lot of that goes back to some leaner years where there were just a lot fewer deer. If you go back to the bad winters in the late 2000s, for example, we had 2 back-to-back really bad winters that really took a toll on the deer population. We had a lot fewer deer, and people were treating does as kind of the breeding engine of the population, almost like they were sacred animals that shouldn't be touched because they're the capacity to create more deer there. But we have so many deer now that we have to do something to manage the population. And the biggest, most powerful tool that we have as a management agency is sport hunting. It allows us to tap into over 100,000 conservation workers out there doing the work for us. And nothing else really comes close to that as far as impacts or manpower. So we rely heavily on hunting to do that. And we've been pushing a lot of messaging, though, to try to change that thought of the buck hunter towards one that's maybe a little more open to taking antlerless deer as we've seen populations increase over time. But he talked a little bit about increasing deer numbers and the impacts of that. So really the impacts of deer, they're kind of a keystone species Too many deer have very wide-ranging impacts. They can impact what you have in your forest for diversity of plants. Deer will focus very heavily on those plants they most prefer to eat and leave others alone, so you'll get less plant diversity. And a lot of times the ones they don't like to eat too are invasive species, so you can end up with a forest that has a lot fewer species and a lot more invasive species among those. And then if you mess with the plant community, you mess with everything. So we've seen associated with higher deer densities, decreases in songbird diversity, invertebrate diversity. It really impacts everything. And that's just ecological impacts. Then talk about social impacts and impacts of too many deer on people. You could write a whole book on that.
Here's an email from Jamie. And I have a feeling this is going to open a little bit of a controversial can of worms, but I'll read it. What is being done to make deer hunting easier, increasing limits and allowing coyotes to prey maximally when there are too many deer? Is it appropriate to hunt coyotes where deer and turkeys are becoming pests? So, Nate, I'm going to go back to you. What would you like to say to Jamie, and what would you like to say generally about the coyote population and its impact on the deer population?
We don't have great data to support this, but my feeling is that generally coyote hunting and trapping is not really impacting the deer population at all. I think the one sort of caveat or the one sort of exception would be in areas where you can target coyotes and areas where deer densities are very high and where they're very vulnerable. So this would be like in deer yards. I do think if you manage or hunt or trap coyotes around deer yards so that they're not able to prey on those very vulnerable deer in the deer yards, that can be impactful and increase deer numbers locally. But I don't think on the landscape level throughout the state, the amount of coyote harvest that we're doing is really impacting the deer population at all.
We'll go to Tracy calling from Palermo. Hi, Tracy. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. So I harvested a antlerless deer during archery season, and I tagged it using my antlerless deer permit. My question is, can I still shoot a buck during archery season or firearm season?
Yep, the options you have left available to you are during what little remains of the archery season, you could take a buck or a doe with your license, or during the firearm season, you could just take a buck.
Tracy, thanks for your call. We will go to Torbert, who's calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. Down here in the Gold Coast, we have probably the highest density of deer per square mile in the state. A problem hunting them is, of course, it's embedded in civilization. The only thing that isn't developed down here are the big swamps and the ridges, and both of which are deer habitat. And the ethos of taking out a buck for bragging rights has led to a huge multiplicity of smaller deer. Every year the herd gets smaller. We got some really tiny deer down here. And the worst problem is we have sewage treatment plants down here, which the farm fields where the deer in early and late in the season love to feed have had sewage sludge spread on them, and that's called PFAS. And you can't really eat them. You shouldn't really eat them. So there's an ecological problem. These tiny deer are in everybody's backyard, and you can't eat them. So what are you going to do?
Nathan.
As far as managing through hunting, you're definitely right. In the more developed parts of the state, it's so hard to get a hunter and to hunt anywhere where there's just houses everywhere or posted land. So we have some tools at our disposal that do rely on hunting. Like we have our expanded archery season, and that's an archery season that runs for 3 months. And it's really just in the more developed areas of the states as well as coastal islands. So a lot of times archery hunting is a little more acceptable to landowners. They don't have to see it. They don't hear the loud noises from the weapons. So they're able to operate a little bit closer in those more developed areas. So we have that, but really if you're going to rely on hunting in a very developed area, it's probably not going to work out for you very well. And so you have to rely on some other management tools, like really working with landowners to protect their plants with physical barriers, with repellents, with deterrents, and maybe even leaning more towards planting species of plants that are not palatable to deer. As far as the observations of smaller deer, we definitely see that in coastal areas and on the islands. I think especially on the islands, the soils are just so rocky and poor that you can't really produce a very large body deer. So I think a lot goes into that besides the age of the deer. There's also nutrition being pretty poor, especially on island areas.
That's so interesting. What is the difference in size? I mean, if you're going to, Torbert's calling from York, Nate, if somebody's taking a deer in York versus, Millinocket, what is going to be the difference in size of the deer?
Yeah, it really comes down to a lot of different things. So with body size, we're mostly talking about age of the animal and nutrition. And a buck in Maine's not really going to reach its peak body weight till it's 5 or 6 years old. So if you think of southern Maine where there's more hunting pressure, a lot fewer deer are going to live to be that old. So they're going to be smaller, mostly because of age in southern Maine. So you're maybe taking an adult buck down there on average 150, 160, 70 pounds dressed weight. But if you go up north and you shoot a buck that's been around for 5 or 6 or 7 years, you might be over 200 pounds.
Wow. Well, Torbert, thanks so much for your call. If you have a question for our experts, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning all about deer hunting in Maine. With me today, Nathan Bieber, who is state deer biologist, and Christy Elliott, registered Maine guide with Maine Women Hunters. Her new book is called Always Game. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Christy, I understand one of the essays, maybe the first essay in your book, is about your first buck. And I don't want to give everything away, but it took you a while to get that, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't have a great shot, and I had to call a licensed tracking dog. So there are folks with licensed tracking dogs, and they can help follow the blood. So if you can't find your deer, you can call one of them, and they can come out and help you find it.
Oh, and what I was meaning is it took you more than a couple years.
Oh, well, that too. Yes.
And you said earlier in the show that you're stubborn. I just don't want to give people the impression that it's easy. It's just a matter of going into the woods, finding a deer, and then harvesting a deer. Tell us how long it took you for your first.
I think I went 6 years it took me 6 years to get my first deer. Yeah. My biggest piece of advice for people who want to get into deer hunting is to start by turkey hunting.
Oh, what about you, Nathan? What do you think of that advice?
I think that's pretty good advice. Gets you kind of an eye for the field, lets you scout very easily, and turkeys can be called in much more easily than deer. So I think it's a good way to start developing your skills and maybe work up to deer hunting from there. And
right,
to Christy's point and yours about how long it takes to get a deer, our success rates for Maine hunters are about 20% a year. So it's not easy. Only about a fifth of our hunters are actually taking a deer every year. It's tough.
One fifth. Interesting. Hal Blood is joining us now. Hal Blood is a master Maine guide with Big Woods Outfitters. Hi, Hal. Thanks for joining us.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay. We're happy to hear you.
You said 11, then you said we're starting it. I thought 11. I mean, I thought it was 11:50. Anyway, screwed up. So sorry.
That's okay, but why don't I asked Christy before if she has a philosophy when she guides. Tell us how long you've been a Maine guide and what your philosophy is.
Been a guide for about 40 years. my philosophy is all we can to give people a good hunt. And hunting's hunting. We're not about just trying to kill something. We're about enjoying a hunt.
Yeah. I'm thinking about my brother, who's a fly fisherman, who says they call it fishing and not catching.
Right.
Hal, you're in the Jackman area. Have you seen changes in the deer population in the time that you've been a guide?
Yeah, sure. The deer herd started declining.
Everybody knows that with the logging. cutting all the deer yards, starting in the late 70s through the 80s, which I started up here in 1980. I made my first trip up north, so that's 45 years ago, I guess. But yeah, there was changes. The deer herd went down dramatically, and then stayed pretty relatively the same through the early 2000s. The 90s was where it really tailed off. Early 2000s, it dropped, and then we had the bad winters of, well, it was really two winters, but it was like 7, 8, 9 or 8, 9, 10, whatever those two winters were. Lost probably, in this area, probably half the deer herd gone that winter. Up north, it was more than that, but this area was about half. And then it stayed slowly rebuilt through the teens. And then now it's back up right now. The last few years, it's back up to where it was in the 90s for sure. It's back up. Due in part to coyote control is the main thing. A lot of guys here have been hunting the coyotes or the hounds. It's helped the deer in the yards because our deer either go to Canada or they come to town. Most of them, not all of them, but there's a big deer yard all the way around town, and people feed them all around town, and it helps them out a lot, you know, to get through it, because there isn't much place handily that they can have other deer yards. So, yeah, but it's good again. It's good. Plenty of deer this year's outlook is really good. Been seeing a lot. I mean, some days I'll see 10 deer just taking a drive, you know.
I'm going to go to a question. This is from Emily on Facebook. And Nathan, I think this is probably a question for you. Can deer hunters send a meat sample to a lab to test for PFAS?
I'm not aware of any lab that will take a submission from the public. They'll only accept samples from our agency or some other agency conducting structured research on PFAS. So I don't think there's any labs that'll take public samples.
Okay. And an email here from TM. My cousin took his daughter hunting for her first doe. He included the name of the gun used. She got her doe. She's 6. What are the age restrictions? And can a 6-year-old really understand death and guns for hunting? Who wants to, I'll start with you, Nate, about the age restrictions. And then Christy, have you talk about how you might talk to kids. Nate?
You can pretty much hunt at any age here. The restrictions are going to be more set by when you can get into a hunter safety class. But we have very young children hunting here, and it's really up to the parents, I think, to educate them well and judge whether or not their kid is capable of understanding life and death and safety with a firearm, and assuming, hoping that the parent is going to be a good mentor and really keep their eye on that kid and guide them.
Yeah. Christy, any thoughts? Have you guided families with kids?
I haven't for deer. I think what Nate said, you know, it depends on the kid, depends on the family. But.
And how, what are your thoughts on children and hunting and guidance there?
Yeah, they've just changed that, you know, several years ago. It used to be 10 was the age limit, and then they voted to make it unlimited. But, yeah, it's up to the parents, really. You know, some kids grow up more mature more quickly than others, but it's definitely a parent's. It's up to the parents, their responsibility to have it. I've guided a lot of kids. I've sat with them in bear stands and taken quite a few kids on moose hunts and stuff. And they're all different. Even teenage kids, sometimes some are far more advanced than the others at the same age, a 12 or a 14. It's still not the same. It's not really an age. It's not an age number. It's an age of the kid's wisdom, I would say.
And if a parent is listening right now, Hal, what kind of guidance would you give them in terms of trying to figure out if your kid's ready?
Well, the main thing is don't force them into stuff. A lot of parents might want to, you know, push them into it for their own benefit, you know, the parents' benefit. But and some don't take to it like that. you got to just bring them along the best you can, explain stuff to them, and you know, obviously in the beginning, maybe get them shooting a BB gun or a 22 at first when they're real young before they can, you know, handle any kind of recoil and get scared off from it. But yeah, just ease them into it. See if they like it. Ironically, I know a lot of families that they might have a girl and a boy, and sometimes a girl takes to it and the boy doesn't, and vice versa. You never know with the kids. They all have their own interests growing up, and they're not all going to take to it. But I always figured if a father hunted and tried to take the kids, there's a 50-50 chance they'll go. But if the father and mother both hunt, then pretty good odds the kids will too, follow along.
An email here from Amelia. One more resource that could be helpful for non-Wabanaki Mainers is that Wabanaki Public Health and Wellness operates a Wabanaki mobile food pantry that accepts wild game meat and non-meat donations year-round. Donations of game meat supports the Wabanaki Mobile Food Pantry's mission of reducing the barriers of access to traditional foods for Wabanaki people. And she says donations can be directed to Wabanaki Public Health and Wellness's Food Sovereignty Program. An email here from Carl. With the warmer winters, the deer are not being winter killed. I let every hunter who asked hunt on my farm. They would get about 4 per year. But the population keeps getting bigger. I would see herds of more than 20. I'm sure it is worse now. So, Nate, we're talking about, and Christy mentioned that if you want to hunt somewhere, of course, ask landowner permission. I'm wondering if the opposite is true, though. Can farmers, people who have a lot of land, approach you and say, I would like to have deer culled on my property? And is there a process for almost inviting hunters to come to your land?
Sort of.
They should contact me. They should contact me.
We actually developed and launched this year what's called the Deer Management Assistance Program, or a DMAP. And the main purpose of our DMAP here is to work with commercial growers and provide them additional removal opportunities. And so we'll actually issue permits to farms, which they can then turn around and distribute to hunters however they see fit. So it's basically a free antlerless permit to try to attract hunters to your farm to kill antlerless deer. So that's a new program that we're working on building and expanding, and we'll also help out with deterrence and repellents and cost sharing for fencing in the future. But new program, a lot of growth yet to occur there, but I'm hopeful that it will help in those types of situations.
And when you say deer, new this year?
Yeah, new this year. This is the first year we've had DMAP permits available, and we're looking to get more to the fencing and deterrence and repellents next year and years beyond.
Okay. And Christy, I'm sure you want to jump in here.
Tell your, you know, hunters that they can all bring a friend and tell them they have to shoot a doe before they can shoot a buck or something, you know, to try to get that population down that's eating, bothering your farm.
An email here from E. In places where they're overpopulated and because of the large number of houses, could you give deer birth control? I'm in favor of hunting, but not a hunter myself. So Nathan, yeah, in the places that E is talking about, have there been other kind of management attempts?
Not so much birth control. That can be effective, but in very limited situations. One, it's very costly, and the cost is typically borne by the community, which can be a barrier. But outside of that, it really only works in closed systems where you don't have immigration and emigration of deer. So that might be a gated community or an island. If you do contraceptive on deer and don't treat them all, and deer are able to come in and out from surrounding areas, you're really not going to have much of an impact on deer numbers in the area. But closed communities, closed systems, that can work pretty well as long as the community is able to bear the cost.
All right. Just a few seconds left. Hal, you'll be out tomorrow morning? Saturday morning?
They're talking about a little snow in the high elevations here, so there's a good chance I'll be out there.
So you are a hunter who is waiting for snow.
Yeah, I like to track so much. I go out every day, even on the bare ground, and keep in shape and give my gun a good lug through the woods. But I try to save myself for track and snow. That's my passion. So, but yeah, I'll be out doing something on Saturday.
Okay. And Christy, you'll be out with your bow this afternoon, right?
Right.
Well, I really appreciate you all joining me. We are out of time. Hal Blood, Maine Master Guide with Big Woods Outfitters, Nathan Bieber, State Deer Biologist with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Christy Holmes, a registered Maine guide, outdoors columnist, and the author of the brand new book, Out Tomorrow, Always Game. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to talk about health insurance premiums and what you need to know about open enrollment. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.